Taking a look at your personal computer now with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
So Google has a new operating system, which they say it's the operating system of the future. What do you think?
Google's has a lot to offer. Chrome, I've downloaded and used their new Chrome browser that's in beta testing, as they call it. But mm-hmm. I'm sure they're making it available to the masses. You just go to google.com/Chrome, and that's the download page. It's faster, more simplistic, less things on it, you know, that get in the way. Kind of on a side of that, Firefox just recently updated their version of their web browser, and I almost feel like they put too much in front of me. So when you go to a web address now, it tells you more about just the web address and who it belongs to. And you know, when you visit frequent sites, when you start seeing this extra stuff, you know, to me it's like, you know, I don't need that. But you know, there might be ways of turning it off, but there's so many preference settings for, you know, software. I tend to just kind of live the full experience for a while before I start looking how to turn off features and things like that. You know, get exposed to the default setup so that see what everyone else is going for.
Well, I tell you what,
well, we got a couple of things. You know, you mentioned in, you know, earlier was Internet Explorer 8.
Right.
They expect, you know, 7 was released in October of 2006.
Right.
And based on how beta testing plays out, they had a problem with 7. In other words, 7 didn't really allow web pages that were in version 6 appear as they were in version 7. Mm-hmm. They got it a little better. So they call it acid test, and it passed that in terms of displaying the browser pages. So they expect it to go through beta testing a lot faster and being approved for release. So my guess is maybe within the first 6 months of 2009, we'll probably see Internet Explorer 8. One of the new features is what they call private browsing, which basically is going to it's not going to have any cookies. So they call it the privacy measures of Internet Explorer 8. So it's not going to allow cookies to be deposited when you visit the website in that particular mode. It's going to eliminate the browsing history after the session is cleared, so it'll eliminate the cache, clear the cache of that session. Now, what's interesting is the online discussions as related to advertising are debating, you know, what is the impact going to be? Because, you know, companies like Google, Yahoo, mm-hmm. and others make their revenue through online advertising.
Right.
Well, they expect that people are going to find that the browsing experience in the privacy mode is going to actually be less rich, less friendly, that unless you really need to turn on the privacy feature, you're probably going to continue to browse the way you were before. So they're not overly concerned about it. And then Jim emailed me a question is related to Consumer Reports has these online blunders for privacy and so forth. And what I do is I took the liberty, I start scratching out a piece of paper, my responses to their list. And what I decided to do is I posted it on my tips page. So if you go to infostar.com and then click on tips, and I believe it's like the first link where it talks about privacy. I even have the link to the Consumer Reports list, mm-hmm. and then I just simply go through my 1 through 11 response to help you even further.
Cool. Well, listen, we've got lots of callers online to visit with you, so let's go to the phones. Jeff in Eau Claire is up first. Jeff, hi.
Hi. I called last month about my CD-ROM drive that wasn't working, and actually wasn't that it wasn't working, it just wasn't being recognized when I powered up the computer.
Okay.
And now it's being recognized, and I'm having a different problem. I put a blank disk in, and it says Windows cannot read from this disk because it's either not formatted or it's not compatible with the system. When I put a a regular CD in, like a music CD, it will recognize the tracks on there, so it's reading that type of disc. But when I want to record a disc, when I put a recordable disc in there, it's saying the disc isn't formatted.
Now, are those new discs that you just purchased?
Yeah, they're brand new.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. I know we've had some callers in the past say that they've had some brand problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's right.
And trying to switch to another brand. You know, see if you can ask a friend if they happen to have, you know, CDR or CDRW disc and you know, borrow one from theirs just to test.
Okay.
Would be something I would initially recommend. Any other information you can share about the CD-ROM? Have you updated drivers, gone online to see if there's anything, you know, newer?
Yeah, I did try to find an updated driver for it.
Okay.
And I installed that, mm-hmm. and didn't seem to make any type of difference.
Okay. Yeah, I would try and see if there's a different brand. I've actually experienced that as well too. So, you know,
try a different one.
See if that works. If it doesn't, you know, you can email me off of the infostar.com website and put in the subject line, you know, CD-ROM problem, you know, I'll take a look into it.
All right.
The more information you can give me about, you know, like computer and, you know, brand and things like that, then...
The better. Thanks, Jeff. Good luck. Lee in Lake Mills is up next. Lee, hello to you.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for the call.
Sure.
I've got a Wintel computer, home-built, 3 to 4 years old, high-end motherboard at the time, and pretty good components otherwise. But anyway... been running reliably for 3 to 4 years. Recently got a little bit concerned about antivirus, so I installed Kaspersky. Coincidentally or not, it was about the same time the computer slowed at least by an order of magnitude in all operations. Yahoo email was maybe a factor of 20 slowing.
Oh.
Everything worked, but everything was... I would have thought a dial-up was a fast connection after watching this. Took it to the Geek Squad. Passed all the hardware. Only problem mentioned was SFC, some sort of file thing. But what they recommended was format the hard drive, reinstall Windows, and then reinstall everything you erased. And I say, wait a minute. You know, we're only talking about operating system here, probably. And their recommendation sounds like it's just an easy way out from rather than doing a surgical approach to this thing or finding out what a surgical approach would be, you know. And I don't like the atomic fly swatter approach to problem solving.
So what do you think, Pete?
Well, you said the first thing that raises a caution flag to me is you said after you installed your antivirus solution, that's when things got slower.
You're right.
So I would have uninstalled that. Let me... correct me if I'm wrong, using a version of Windows XP?
Yeah, XP Pro.
Yeah. One of the easier ways would just have had an access point and restore prior to the installation, you know.
Done it.
Okay. So did you remove that antivirus solution?
No. It's okay. Still there, but I've tried it both ways. I've had some pretty lengthy conversations with HP. Mm-hmm. And... well, some other, I forget, it may have been Microsoft, but I doubt it. I don't like to ask them questions. But I disabled everything, you know, myself, just to say, okay, you know, email takes me, you know, a good 30 seconds to reload a page of messages, just the headings, mm-hmm. which normally is a tenth of a second operation. So I went through and I disabled Kaspersky, all aspects, disabled it. No change. So I think, well, maybe it's not the easy way out here is just to get rid of Kaspersky. Maybe there's something else wrong. That's why I took it outside the house, you know.
So I guess to pick it up again, did you get rid of Kaspersky?
No, it's still there.
Okay. See, I would eliminate it from the picture
mm-hmm.
and put in place a different solution to see, you know, there might be some hooks that they've put in place that are running interference with different features of the operating system so that it's almost acting like a, not a force field, but a roadblock.
Yeah, well,
that the OS has to get around in order to do some normal functions.
Yeah.
So just by even being present on your system, it's still running interference, even though you disable a number of features of it. The other, another question I have, you know, could be coincidental, but in terms of hard drive capacity, what does your system look like?
Very close to maximum.
Very close to maximum.
So when you say very close to maximum, what size hard drive?
It's got like a 40 gig.
And you're very close to the 40 gig?
I'm at 136.
Okay, see, that's another problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've listened to the show before, but I've mentioned this numerous times. One thing, have you changed any of the default settings for, like, the recycle bin and the restore feature?
I did something with restore. Oh, I shut off the restore feature. I just turn it on and create a point where I want it. I don't let the machine decide when.
Okay. Well, but you didn't change any of the default settings, and what that tells me is with you being so close to the maximum, what's going on is the operating system is basically fighting for space to access that hard drive and allow you just to use the computer. So what you should do is if you right-mouse click on the recycle bin, click on Properties, and resize the hard drive down to 1% of your recycle bin.
Oh, yes.
You're going to gain back a lot of space that the OS is just allocating just for that recycle bin.
Yeah.
The other thing is if you go into System Restore and click on Change System Restore Settings, you'll see there's a bar there where you can also resize that down from the default of 12%. Which would be probably 4.5 gigabytes mm-hmm. of space, down to about 1%. Mm-hmm. And between the two of those, even though you may say you're using 36 of 40 gigabytes in terms of storage, the operating system is trying to squeeze out of that mm-hmm. even, you know, space just to manage for itself. And along with the amount of memory you have in your computer, how much RAM do you have?
Half a gig.
Half a gig. Yeah. So what happens is the swap space is at least a gigabyte of that hard drive
mm-hmm.
that the operating system is using just to as cache memory to throw things in and out or on and off that hard drive into RAM to just allow it to do its things while you're using the computer. So you don't want to mess with the swap space, but you have to recognize that it is something that the computer's using as part of the hard drive.
Yeah.
So if you change a couple of those things and get rid of your do a disk cleanup and get rid of a lot of your temporary files,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know what you're using for email, but if you're using anything on your computer for email that brings in the email like Outlook or Outlook Express, I would do delete what's in your delete box. I would do a cleanup or a compact your email boxes so everything is nice and clean and tight and then do a disk defragmentation, which may take a while on your system, so you got to be patient with it. So it's something mm-hmm. you probably want to do before you go to sleep, and you may still see it going in the morning, but I would do all those things and then run a disk defragmentation and then do a restart a couple of times, and then you know, in terms of an AV solution, maybe get free virus project software called ClamWin is one, AVG, Avast, Bitdefender. Those are other programs that are available out there, you know, to try that are at no cost.
Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, with us today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Visiting about your personal computer with Peter Green of InfoStar, Larry Mueller here. Let's go back to the phones and to Joe in Centuria. Joe, hello to you.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Peter, it was just very opportunistic that you were on the program this morning. I just, on your past recommendations and listening to you on the show, I got tired of dealing with Norton Internet Security. I got rid of it, and I downloaded and purchased Bitdefender.
Okay.
I got Internet Security 2009, installed it on my computer yesterday, or the day before. What I encountered was, and it's basically a problem that has to do with my email program. I use Microsoft Outlook, and it won't let me send pictures. I can send a regular email. I cannot send, like, in a document attachment or pictures. I spoke with their customer service representatives. They tried a couple different things, unchecked these couple of boxes, did that. So they basically threw up their hands, told me to go to this website, and now I'm supposed to do like a system dump and then a file dump from them so that they supposedly can figure out what's going on. Do you have any ideas what's going on with this thing?
Hmm. So you've already corresponded with them, and
yep.
They're how old's your system?
I'm using Windows XP. Mm-hmm. It's a Service Pack 3. I get all the updates and everything is update. I'm not, as far as old, the computer itself is rather old, but it's been working good. I mean, it's
right.
I've got the hard drive is plenty of space. I got it's a 2 gig hard drive, but I don't keep a lot, too much stuff on there.
Right.
And a gigabyte of RAM, so it's not. I don't think it's a memory issue, but there's some setting or something that, for whatever reason, is not allowing emails with, and that says outgoing.
They're right.
Not allowing
right.
it to send. It comes back right. It's saying it's undeliverable.
Mm-hmm.
To various different addresses, and I know all the addresses that I'm sending to are valid.
Right.
And so they had me uncheck, scan outgoing mail, so I've unchecked that. And then there was another one under, I believe it was anti-spam or privacy control. I can't remember exactly which one. But to uncheck images, to not look at images. None of that helped.
So even with unchecking scan outgoing mail, it's still?
Correct. It made no difference.
Okay.
Hmm.
Have you tried any other kinds of attachments?
Well, I tried a document. Like, for example, I tried a simple test Word document.
Right.
And that wouldn't let it go through either.
Right. But have you tried, for example, one thing that might be worth trying is to use something like WinZip or WinRAR or PKWare. There are a number of archiving programs to actually shrink the file down in size, and you can attach it to email. Send it just like a picture file or a document file, but it would actually be smaller. Kind of squeezes the water out of it, mm-hmm. the weight out of the file.
Okay.
And try and see if it would allow that kind of file to go out. I can't really answer for them why they're having that kind of problem with your system, with their software.
You haven't had that problem.
I don't really have problems sending.
Yeah.
Well, it was just the fact of, I didn't have it with Norton Internet Security, although
right.
I had other issues with
right.
that program.
Right.
And I thought, so I got the Bitdefender, and everything seemed to be going okay, the installation and everything.
Right.
And it's just now that I'm thinking it's just like, okay, I've got a box checked somewhere that shouldn't be checked or something that is going on with it that is not allowing it. But they just kind of seem to, so now they put me to a website, and like I said, I'm supposed to do a system dump, and then I'm supposed to do a file dump from Bitdefender, and then I'm supposed to send it to them.
A couple of suggestions. I know one is kind of a pain to get around. The other one would be maybe do some of your own research on this problem versus going to Bitdefender. Maybe someone else has found a solution. One is if you've got a number of photos to share or even files, there are some websites that you can actually load those up to and then just direct people to them, mm-hmm. to go view or pick them up. On my Virus Info Center page, I've got links. If you go scroll down to where it says backups, there are a number of sites there that you can, for transferring files, uploading them to their website. So that's one kind of workaround solution. Another one is to simply ask them, for your money back because, you've got that problem. And then try another antivirus solution and see how that works. You might want to download a trial version of some other software to see, if it works, passes a test before you, commit to purchasing.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things when they, gave it to me, all of a sudden when I, it was one of these things you purchase it from the website and download, all of a sudden there was three items there to, when you said, okay, I want to get this,
mm-hmm.
and they gave me three items to download. Basically, it looked like two versions of this Internet Security 2009, mm-hmm. and then the 2008. And I'll download it, and I didn't. I just installed one. But what it looked like was one, they gave you a trial version,
mm-hmm.
and then one was the regular version that you could purchase.
Mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, that was kind of a goofy thing there. But
right.
Anyway, I guess the only thing I'll do is I'll try to continue on with this.
Well, the one other suggestion I had would be to, you know, do something like a search, you know, over the internet web using Google or whatever your search engine is, and, you know, type in, you know, Bitdefender sending pictures problem or sending email rejection, you know.
Just, yeah,
you know,
give that a
post
try.
Post that and see if someone else has had problems as well.
Yeah.
Just don't think you're alone.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks, Joe, for calling. Appreciate it. Matt in Hatfield, we'll go to you now. Hi, Matt.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
My hard drive is currently very close to full, so I'm hoping to get some advice on getting a second hard drive, if that's possible, like an external one. And I was looking for your advice.
Okay. What kind of system do you have?
Windows XP. I have a Sony Vaio computer.
Okay. About how old is it?
It's about 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Do you know if you have a FireWire attachment to that computer?
I do.
You do? Okay. Because I know Sony is heavily into video, so that's why I threw that out there. What you should do is, are you familiar with a program called Blark Advisor?
Not at all.
Okay. If you type in the word BELARC space advisor, you'll go to their site, and it's a download application that interacts with your Internet Explorer to show you all the details about your computer. And what you should check and see is what kind of FireWire capacity you have. There's two versions. There's one that does 400 million bits per second, and number two, I think, does 800. And just make sure that you have the capability. You know, if you have the capability of doing the faster one, then what you might want to do is look for an external hard drive that has the FireWire interface. And that will, along with the speed of the hard drive, so probably if you buy the latest technology and it has FireWire, you'll probably be as fast as, you know, you can be. The newer drives are called SATA2, and their interface, you know, allows them to be extremely fast as well. So between FireWire and the newer drives, capacity-wise, I've seen in the paper specials where, 500 to 1 terabyte, drives are anywhere from like $90 to around $200, which is, you know, pretty good pricing for quite a bit of storage. Trying to remember the limits on XP in terms of hard drive support size, but terabyte, I think, is probably pushing its limit. But, I'm sure, the installation instructions will, you know, cover whether or not you even want to partition it into maybe, if you go that way, to two separate drive letters. So let's say your hard drive is letter C and your CD-ROM or DVD drive is letter D. If you have a floppy drive, it would be A, and if you had two, it would be B. And if you put in a thumb drive or something that was into a USB port, it would be first assigned as letter E. But if you pulled it out, then E would disappear. But if you put an external drive on your system and you partitioned it into a couple of drives, you would have drive E and F. And then when you put a thumb drive in, it would be G. So that's how that works.
All right. Thanks for calling, Matt. Appreciate it. Chris in Burlington, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Hi. Larry. Peter, I'm hoping I can throw you an easy one here. trying to get a next-year wireless router set up. And I've got a fairly new HP laptop with Vista.
Okay.
I had an original router, which was a Netgear, hooked up and had a lightning strike, and it zapped the router. Everything else seems to be working fine. I got I can pick up other wireless networks with the laptop. Tried to install a new router by the same company. It seemed like it was an upgraded version, and have all kinds of conflicts now. I can't get it to, if I get it through all the way to the installation process, sometimes it'll lock up the computer, or I'll get some error messages about not recognizing any kind of DSL signal or things of that type. So I'm hoping that you can just tell me how to erase everything off of there and start again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to tell you based on experience how I deal with these, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to call them right away, what I do is I go through, you know, if I'm having problems or I don't quite like the way things are set up or if I'm not sure it's working right, I go right back to how to go to the factory default settings, and there's usually a reset on the router, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that eliminates your login password and takes everything back just the way it was shipped in the box. So, and there's always instructions about that. Matter of fact, I remember doing a search because someone told me they had a router, and I forgot what name they said, and I went to did a search on router admin password, you know, and it listed like five of the manufacturers with, you know, the IP default IP address that you have to log into, with the admin and the password that they use. So it's in the instructions, whether it's on your CD or if there's a little print thing, you know, it's there. And go back to the factory defaults and go through, you know, the setup wizard that they use to get a feel for how their product works. If you can't get it to work with that, I pick up the phone and I call them. Because
okay.
I can tell you, you can wrestle with these things, and it's actually not your fault. They
yeah.
can be broken out of the box. Okay?
That makes me feel better.
Also, here's the next kicker. They're on the shelf. You don't know how long they've been on the shelf.
Yeah.
Okay? And sometimes there's a firmware issue, whether it's with your PC or a firmware issue with the router, and they've discovered an issue, a conflict, a problem that you're going through that actually exists for a lot of other people, but because it may have been sitting on the shelf for 6 months or whatever, you have no idea. And the only way you're going to find that out is, you know, flip over that router, and the information's also on the box, but have all that stuff handy so when they ask you, you know, what version of router you're using, what's the firmware, and all this stuff, you'll have all that information in hand. Now, I'll give you a perfect example of how this stuff comes into play. How old is your laptop?
It's fairly new. I bought it like in February. So.
Okay. Well, my son was freshman last year, so we bought his computer in August. And he said, "Dad, I hate Vista. You got to get rid of this for me. You got to do something. You got to fix it." And I don't know if you remember, we had a show. He called me up from where he was going to school in Whitewater, and he said, "Dad, I can't get into my computer. It just went through this update thing, and I rebooted. Now I can't get it." Now, I mentioned there was a Vista problem with that, with the service pack, and it wasn't allowing his computer to restart. So anyhow, make a long story short, I redid his laptop, and I put XP Professional on it. Okay, took about 3 hours to go through, and this is not including him backing everything up. But the moral of the story is that by in doing this whole thing, he wasn't getting any updates from HP, any information from HP. But when I reinstalled XP Professional and downloaded all the information from HP's site in terms of driver updates and all these things that they said, you know, to install when you're reinstalling a computer, one of the issues he was having was wireless was not working properly. Well, it turns out there was an actual CPU issue in the laptop where they extended the warranty for an additional year and will pay for shipping to them and back to him to get it fixed if the firmware update, so I was flashing the BIOS, didn't fix the problem. In other words, if the problem didn't go away, then they would say, "Give us a call, we'll pick it up, we'll pay for it, and we'll send it back." So I'm just saying that firmware and conflicts can be an issue both in the computer and in routers and devices that you're trying to hook up, wireless print servers and so forth. So pick up the after you know going through the factory defaults, pick up the phone, call them, and see if there happens to be an issue.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Lynette in Hubertus is up next. Lynette, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I have two questions. First of all, I use Firefox or Mozilla for my browser.
Okay.
And once in a while, I'll go to a web page and there'll be a Contact Us tab. And I will click on Contact Us and it automatically wants to go to Internet Explorer to send my contact information. And whenever it goes to Internet Explorer, which I don't use, it hangs up the entire computer. I can't do anything. It just hangs there, and I end up having to just completely turn it off. I can't shut anything off, shut anything down. I just have to turn it off, turn it back on, and resume as normal. Is there anything I can do to make it not try to use Internet Explorer? Do I just remove Internet Explorer?
So you're saying when you don't want to remove Internet Explorer because my son did that, and I didn't read him the Riot Act, but I said don't ever do that again. Internet Explorer is something that you need to interact with Microsoft's support pages, Windows updates, and so forth, because they use ActiveX, and Firefox does not use that, so you won't be able to gain access to updates and things like that through Microsoft. So even if you don't use it, you should keep it current and occasionally view it and, make sure you're staying current with Microsoft in terms of their operating system updates. So you're saying you go to a web page and sometimes you click on a Contact Us. Is that like an email link?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. What you may want to do if you're clicking on that Contact Us, there may be a setting, I'm not sure where, you might have to do a search on this, to see how to change your default setting that's launching, when you click on the Contact Us from Internet Explorer to Firefox. I'm not sure where that preference is actually embedded in the system, but if there's someone out there that's probably done it, I'm sure it's available, by doing a search online. The other thing is just looking, if you hover over the Contact Us, you can usually see down below it's almost like right above the status bar, you should be able to see, what that email address is, and you could, write it down. The other thing is if you right mouse click on it, you might be able to get it to pop open in a different window in Mozilla Firefox. That would be another thing to maybe try.
Okay.
All right.
Rather than just clicking on it directly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll try that. My next question is regarding Norton Internet Security.
Mm-hmm.
And when it does a full system scan,
yep,
I'll get a report back that I need attention required on, and this has been going on for a couple of years now, 202 items. And when it says apply the action, and I apply the action, I get a status window back that says for each individual item, but it's all the same, it says adware hotbar cannot be removed from an unsupported file. And it says remove failed. So
how do you fix that?
It doesn't seem to be causing any problems.
Right.
Is it something that is causing a problem that I'm not aware of, and how do I get rid of it?
Well, it sounds to me like something got on your system, and Norton is not able to completely deal with it. So, they're continually feeding, giving you this feedback with, the action required. So what I would do is actually go, get as much detail as you can as related to the message that you're getting. I would go to Norton's site and go to their probably support tech support area. You might be able to search on their site on some of the things that you can gather the information on, and maybe actually may you may actually be able to find a page that tells you what the solution is. There may be a removal tool that they've created. I even have links on my Virus Info Center page where you can explore definitions on viruses or worms, trojans, and things like that. And some of them post removal tools because for some reason they can't get it into their software and even with their updates, but they can actually create removal tools that will you can download onto your computer, run the removal tool for a specific problem, and it will, you know, get it off of your computer.
Huh.
So
that's worth a try for sure.
That's what I would do.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, good luck.
Thanks very much for calling. And Laura in Arpin is up next. Laura, hi to you.
Hello. A couple of weeks ago, our desktop computer just basically crashed. It was time for it to go. And as we realized what was happening, we backed a whole lot of stuff up onto an external hard drive. Now, we've replaced the computer with a laptop, and any time I try to get something off of that external hard drive, I get a message that says access denied. We moved from Windows XP to now Windows Vista, and I was wondering if that might be the issue, or what we might be able to do to access the files on this external drive.
I'm just wondering, when you backed that up, how did you back that up? Did you simply copy files to it, or did you use a backup program? Or
we did a save to, you know, when you could go up into the save as I think. My husband actually did it, so I think he did the save as and went to the external drive.
I'm just wondering if he saved it as a user, so it may have user permissions on that file, and those user permissions are not the same as the user that's trying to access it from the laptop.
And the user permissions are coming from the computer, because it never asks for a password or anything.
Right. You may actually have to explore Microsoft's knowledge base. You could type in a search for that. There may be other resources on my website you might want to try. If you go to infostar.com, click on Virus Info Center, on the top page it says forums, and I'm just trying to there's a link that says let's see. Guidance up on top, which also says MSK base. There's a link, you know, and specify Vista's your operating system. And the question that I would put in would be, you know, permission problem accessing XP external hard drive, you know, something along those lines. And there might be a Microsoft tech paper or what they call a white paper on explaining how to do that, how to fix that.
It's worth a try anyway, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, the only other thing I can think of is depending upon the encryption on if there was any kind of user encryption, because, you know, every system is different. But maybe even copying those files from the external drive, you know, so in other words, using Windows Explorer, you can at least grab the files, bring them over, and then, you know, re-log into that system with hopefully the same user permissions that you had with the other, you know, the other older system. But, you know, there are differences between the two. So that's why Microsoft, I'm sure, has probably been confronted with that kind of question.
Good luck again. Thank you very much, Laura, for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look inside your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, Larry Mueller here. Give us a call with your question at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. On to Bob in Westfield now. Bob, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I've got an older machine running XP Pro on, a 20-gig hard drive in it. Yeah, it's just about max. What I've been thinking about doing is putting like a 40 or a 60-gig second hard drive in there and using the 20 just for the operating system. Would this work okay, or would be better off just putting a bigger hard drive and leaving everything on one hard drive?
No, you can do that. That works just fine.
Okay. Yep. Is there any advantages to one or the other?
Well, you can, you know, if you have, you know, in terms of backing up some critical files, you could back them up to both drives. Usually, excuse me, unless it's, you know, a lot of pictures and music files, but just important documents and maybe some accounting system files, you know, for personal accounting, you know, you have more than adequate storage on the main hard drive and you back it up to the secondary one. But it works fine.
Yeah, no problem.
The issue you might have, you might run into, is you. How old's the computer?
Oh, it's oh boy, this thing has got to be probably about 10, 11 years old.
Yeah, the issue you might run into is trying to find a mate for it.
Yeah.
In other words, you're going to have a primary drive, which is the one you have in. You're going to have a secondary, so they call them master and slave, or primary and secondary. But finding one that matches the technology of the drive that you have in the system. So more than likely, you have an IDE drive. So when you go looking for an IDE drive that's, you know, 40, 60, 80, 120, 160... you need to look for an IDE drive. You don't want an SATA or an SATA2 drive, a newer technology, because you won't have the connectors for those.
Yeah. So IDE drive.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for calling.
And the way to make sure on your computer, you know, the BELARC advisor that I've mentioned in terms of downloading, BELARC advisor, if you do search on that, I've got links under utilities on my Virus Info Center page. That gives you more than you'd ever want to know about your computer. Some of the stuff you'll understand and some you won't, but it'll tell you about your hard drive and what you have.
Good luck, Bob. Thank you. Scott in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I had a couple of comments following up on a few callers from before. The first with the woman who's using Firefox and having difficulty with the Contact Us link. Most of the Mozilla code base, when you click on links that are email hyperlinks, they look for the default email program, and on most Windows machines, that tends to be Outlook or Outlook Express. If that doesn't happen to be installed, then it'll default to Explorer to try to find and install for Outlook or Outlook Express. So that's probably what's going on with that. She can go into the preferences in Mozilla and Firefox and set what her email program is. But generally, since most people tend to use webmail, it's better to just right-click on that, copy the email address from the link, and paste that into your webmail of choice, be it Yahoo, Hotmail, Gmail, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that should,
that should solve it.
Get around
yep.
it, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The second quick follow-up would be the previous caller who'd had difficulty with the hard drive where they'd copied all the contents to backup and then couldn't access it from the laptop. As stupid as this might sound, I have this nagging feeling that they may not have necessarily copied the files. But too many times I've seen people think they're copying when what they're really just doing is linking. And now they can't find the original files because all that's on that external drive are not the files, but they're the links pointing to those files.
Oh.
And I have a concern that might be what happened. Mm-hmm. I've seen it happen a lot because people think that dragging will often make a copy. But in older service pack versions of XP, as well as going back prior, too often that just linked. So they may want to take a look at those and make sure those aren't pointers, make sure they're the actual files.
Right.
No. Oh, good points. Thank you, Scott.
Yep. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Oh, always good to get some other eyes on this. Let's
yep.
go to Mike in Oshkosh. Mike, hello to you.
Good morning, Larry and Peter.
Hi.
I'm another member of the Why You Hate Vista club here, and I think there should be a support group for us. My main problem is I have disabled just about every safety thing in Vista so that I can now do most anything I want without it popping up and asking me if I'm sure that I want to do this. And there must be something else that I need to disable because when I just use the plain old Explorer, the way you used to get around finding your files and folders, quite often I still get messages that say access denied. Or if I try installing a printer across my network at home, it'll say I don't have the authorization level needed, administrative level needed. Have you got any ideas of anything else that I can go in there and kill.
Have you explored using Microsoft's knowledge base at all?
Not yet.
Yeah, I would recommend doing that.
My main problem with Microsoft Knowledge Base is I've tried using it many, many times.
Right.
And you can put in a search and you'll get 12,000 possible things to look at.
You just have to get...
They don't refine it too well.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to search it for a while and refine your questions. I know it takes a while sometimes to find the answers, but I do searches both within their system and also within Google. And sometimes within Google, I'll find great search or solutions that people have provided and posted with great instructions. And other times I won't, which then reverts me back to exploring some of the online forums and, you know, including Microsoft in that search as well, because sometimes they have tech papers that are specific for those problems. I'll give you an example. I had a problem where I was configuring 10 computers, and they were all basically identical. And for whatever reason, I would have a problem running Windows Update, and it wouldn't allow me to get it to the latest version. But on other computers, it worked fine. So I went and I did a search, and it turned out, and that included getting MS Defender updated.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that, and don't ask me why it wouldn't update. It just, you know, you'd say, okay, go grab the latest updates after I just downloaded you, and it would refuse to do that. So I went online, and I said, okay, let's take a stab. I did a search and found a page that was posted by some person that took the time and said, if you create this file in Notepad with these specific lines and then save it as he instructed it to be saved, not mm-hmm. as a regular file, but as a file that Microsoft would recognize when you ran it as a batch file, it would go and check all the different components. And then once you ran that and then rebooted the computer, everything
was fine.
Everything was fine. Now, to go find that on Microsoft's site,
no.
Probably not.
Yeah.
So that's why I try it one, two, or even several ways. But sometimes trying to find the answer is in asking the question with little hooks in it, which lead you down different paths. To try and find what best works for your situation.
One quick thing for some of your previous callers. There are still some of these EIDE hard drives, 160
right.
gig, and they're about in some of the big box electronics stores. But
right.
they seem to be clearing them out.
Yeah.
CompUSA, which closed down store, I know they closed down a store in Madison. They have an online store, and they have, you know, quite a bit of stuff. I don't know about places like Best Buy and Circuit City. They tend to keep newer things in. Occasionally you find some older technology supported, but, you know, like the caller said, you know, stuff disappears. eBay would be, you know, some of the suppliers. Just do your due diligence and check and see who the seller is, and, you know, they're out there.
Yeah.
Just got to hunt a little.
Yep.
Yep.
Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Nelson in Ashland, it's your turn now. Hi, Nelson.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My problem right now is I have a Seagate, I think it's a 160 gig portable hard drive. And I think it got plugged into a USB port, PlayStation 2. And I don't know what that did, but it wiped some of the registry, or it wiped something. And now when I plug it into my computer, it shows up on the removable devices thing at the bottom corner, and it recognizes it as the hard drive. It doesn't show up in the hardware in the system info sections, and I can't find it anywhere else.
Huh, yeah. We got about a minute or so.
Well, I can tell you that if this tells me anything, helps you with anything, I was researching, I have a DVR, and you can plug in an external drive on that DVR, but they caution you in that if you plug in the external drive into the USB port of the DVR, it's going to recognize it for that device. But if you go to plug it into a computer, it's not going to recognize how it's, you know, working with the DVR. So moving it between a PlayStation and a PC tells me it's a similar scenario, and there may have been an action taken on the PlayStation that renders that drive incompatible for use with the PC. So to verify that, I would just research that online, you know, in terms of external drive, plug-in, PlayStation, you know, and using it on a PC, how does that all play out? Because that's what that tells me happened.
All right, good luck, Nelson. Thank you very much for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, with us here on the IdeasNet. Talking your personal computer with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Glad to have you listening in. And Pete, you always like to start out this part of the program with your top 10 list. And what have you got for us today?
I got one that you're going to like right off the bat, Larry. If you go to InfoStar.com, click on current top 10 or the archives and scroll down to today's date, they're all there. This first one is called dbstalk.com. And it's a satellite resource dealing with technical issues and latest news, and cool. It's got a searchable discussion forum. Number two is it's a online database of free published articles, 493,000+ by almost 55,000 authors on a wide variety of topics that can be used for your website content or newsletters, and it's called articlesbase.com. This next one is a personal style clothing online store.
Oh.
Helps you kind of fit based on your information, you know, what's going to look best for you. There's a couple of them. The one that I linked to for number three is Zafu, Zafu.com. Mm-hmm. Number four is the largest interactive network of online college newspapers in the United States, and it's called College Media Network, and their domain is collegepublisher.com. So if you're looking for colleges, newspapers, it's, and you know, even before you go to college and you want to know, it's
what's
great.
What's going on?
Yep, great resource. This next one, and I was surprised you haven't heard it. Maybe it's, I don't know how new it is, but it's a resource that lists low airfares on all airlines, including Southwest. They boasted that. And includes special fares that you can only buy on the airline's own websites. And it's called airfarewatchdog.com. And I also listed a couple other good air and leisure travel sites, too. This next one is a resource that provides user-friendly Linux tutorials about almost every topic, and it covers all the different Linux versions that are out there. It's called howtoforge.com. This next one is an antivirus resource. It's a free online scan service, so you can actually check a suspicious file, and it's called veerscan.org. And for all those HDTV aficionados, highdefforum.com is an HD forum dedicated to the discussion of high-definition technology with over 90,000 members. And they have, you know, it's a discussion forum, so you can research virtually any topic there. This next one, it's interesting. I was at a party in talking with a friend who's got a son that plays junior hockey, and he mentioned this site, and he said it's it provides all these statistics for amateur sports and also has some professional as well, and it's called pointstreak.com.
Okay.
And that's how he keeps up on his son's performance. And then this last one is covers sports rumors, videos, news, blogs, forums, and more, and it's called YardBarker.com. I just love that name, Yard Barker. And I've got a link to Google's new Chrome browser, and last month's links are right below, and have fun.
So go to InfoStar.com, and it's right there.
Yep.
All right. On to Kay and Slinger now. Hi, Kay.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I'm calling because I probably have a really big question. You know, it's a big problem, and I just don't know how to solve it. Our son and son-in-law tried to help us, and they weren't able to. But it starts out with we're not able to print anything on our email. Every time I want to print something, I get the error message saying runtime error has occurred. And then you, they say, do you want to debug? And you'll say yes. And so they send you through this whole thing. And it all boils down to is what they're saying is that we don't have an MSX ML3. DLL cannot be found. And I'm just wondering what we have to put into the computer to make that become a reality.
Okay. Excuse me. Well, there's a couple of things you can do. There are some... what I would simply do is type in an online search the exact MSX whatever .dll file that it's referring to, and print and then printer problem and which version of Windows you're using. Using XP or Vista or
XP.
Okay, and put in Windows XP and see what kind of results come up. Or you can just do simply a search for missing, you know, whatever that .dll file is, and, you know, look for how to, the instructions for how to replace it. It may be that something happened on your system that it simply got corrupted or mistakenly deleted with, an uninstall or for whatever reason, it just didn't follow through. And
you've got the specifics there. I think you'll get a pretty quick answer.
Yeah, usually when you get a specific message, even with error messages with numbers in them, don't send them to Microsoft and don't, go through the debug because that's usually a waste of time.
We found that out for a month.
Yeah. I mean, number one, if you send a message to Microsoft, they're never going to get back to you because, it's like raining in Seattle, debug or tech messages that are from system crashes. So I can't imagine I've never heard of anyone ever getting a call back or even a response is related to what's going on. But what I would do is whenever you get a specific message, always write it down. I tell people, keep either a notepad or a notebook with computer issues, so that you can, this is a problem and how you solved it. And maybe, it'll be handy later on down the road. You'll be able to, reference it again or see if there's a pattern. When you keep a notebook, and if there's a pattern of problems, is it a pattern with a user or is it a pattern with a computer?
Good luck, Kay. Thanks for calling. Richard in Montford, we'll go to you. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I've got a problem with a laptop. It's over a 1 gigahertz machine, fairly new. You're running XP. I downloaded something that popped up. It said it was an official something from Microsoft to get rid of spyware. I loaded it, and then it seemed to hang up. I couldn't. It gave me a message that it was unload. Detected something, and it was getting rid of something. And I finally had to interrupt it. But now all I get when I start up the computer, I get a white background, and my icons are fuzzy. I have not noticed a particular degradation of service otherwise. And I'd like to get back to my old one. And every now and then, it seems fairly soon after I start up, it will pop up with another message that is getting rid of this same worm or whatever it is, a Trojan horse type thing. And I'd like to get rid of the whole thing and get back to my original screen.
How long has the problem been going on?
Oh, just a few days.
Okay. What I would try and do is, and Microsoft's system restore feature has no effect on any data files. It just simply goes back to prior to program installations. So what I would recommend in your case, since you said it hasn't been going on for months, is go back to the day prior to when you did that download.
Uh-huh.
And restore your system back to an access point that's like the day before that. And it'll reconfigure your system back to that point in time, and then it'll reboot. and then, you know, check and see how it is. And then I don't know what kind of message or what you got that, you know, made you act to click on and download something. But, you know, if it was like a little pop-up screen that said something was going on, do you want to check or analyze your system? That kind of gives it away to me that, it, you know, it wasn't really a message from Microsoft. It was a message from somebody else that was trying to get in on your system, you know, to...
Yeah, I was afraid of that, but the way it came up when I started up, and it mm-hmm. didn't... I don't think of it as like a pop-up. I know what you're talking about. I've gotten those.
Yeah, but it can... Who are you using for internet access? Who's the service provider?
It's CenturyTel.
Uh-huh. Are you like a dial-in connection, or are you broadband?
No, I've got DSL.
Okay. Do you know if you have Microsoft Messenger coming up on your system?
No, I don't.
Okay. Because sometimes, you know, these things that pop up before you kind of get started with your system are backdoor, you know, access to your computer. But in your case, I would recommend, you know how to do this system restore? Have you ever done that before?
No.
What you do is you click on the start, click on programs, then you'll see accessories, and you could slide your mouse up to accessories and then a window, you know, another set
okay,
of programs.
I gotcha.
And then go to system tools and then system restore.
Gotcha.
And then it's really pretty straightforward, and you should see a calendar that shows you, you know, the dates that you could go back to that your system created some restore points for.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Good luck. Thank you,
good
Richard.
Luck.
Paul in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, or afternoon, I guess. Timely program. I have a problem. I just got back from Labor Day weekend, and I can't get my desktop to appear when I start Windows Vista.
So it is.
Everything runs when I turn the computer on. Everything runs just as it normally would, right up to the logon screen, and I typically use a fingerprint logon. When I do that, when I log on either with the fingerprint or clicking on my user account, I get the screen that says "Welcome to Vista" as Vista loads. But then, typically, what will happen is the screen will go dark for an instant, and you get your desktop. Well, what's happening is the screen goes dark and stays dark.
You should try and start it in the safe mode if you can.
I did that,
and
I got as far as I did get an option for startup repair. I went to the repair your computer option,
uh-huh.
and I ran startup repair. It did whatever test it normally does and popped up a message that says there's nothing to repair. Windows is running just fine. And I did, incidentally, then I restarted with F8 again and ran a system restore to the last restore point I had, which is about a week old.
Right.
And the same thing happens. I get as far as the logon screen. I log on. I get the welcome screen, and then the screen just goes black. Although I can, the only thing I can do is I can start Task Manager by clicking Control-Alt-Delete.
Gives you access to Task Manager.
Right.
Hmm.
And that's the only thing I have access to.
So, and the rest of the screen is blank?
Just blank.
Hmm.
And it's interesting, in Task Manager, if I go to, let's say, Services, I just counted about 140 services on this machine. Only 20 are running, and some that you would expect to be running, such as Windows Defender, Windows Update, things like that, are stopped. Spooler is stopped. So something is preventing all the services from loading, but as far as the system, when I run the repair, it thinks Windows is running just fine. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't seen that before.
Okay.
It's a little perplexing because it sounds like your video is working. There's something, you know, obviously with the operating system that is either, you know, a file has been corrupted that it's not detecting or has been replaced with, you know, blank.
Yeah.
So you can't
see. I should say when I get that blank screen, I do have a cursor. That's mm-hmm. all I have, and it moves. It responds to a mouse movement, but the screen is just blank. No start menu, no task tray, no desktop.
Yeah. The only thing I could recommend, I don't have any quick fixes for that, is to try and do some kind of search, you know, from obviously from another computer that has internet access, to see if that's been reported as a problem.
Yeah.
You know, no desktop, mouse active, Windows Vista, you know, and then, you know, start from there and just, you know, might have to rephrase it different ways, add reboot or startup, you know, no desktop, Windows Vista, things like that, and see, you know,
what
happens.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't sound like a hardware issue. It sounds like something's happened to the operating system.
Yeah. Good luck, Paul. Thank you very much for calling. I'm sorry we didn't have a definitive answer on that. That is a tough one. Norda in Eagle River, it's your turn now. Hi.
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 What can we do for you?
Well, I have a XP, and the printer, when you go into the print, and then you go down to number of copies, and I do, it never prints more than one, regardless of what I put in. Either if I go to the print, you know, the written out print, or I do use the picture of the print and click it three times, it always just prints one copy. any ideas?
So if you click it, so you're saying if you put in number three where it says for number of copies?
Yeah, on the right-hand side of the...
Right.
Right.
And how old is the system?
Well, I inherited it, I'd say about 4 or 5 years.
Okay, do you know if the device driver or the printer that's set up in the computer is exactly the printer that's on your system?
Well, I don't know what any of that means.
Okay. Well, what I would recommend, whenever I don't see something working correctly with the computer talking to the printer, usually what I do is I do an uninstall or delete the printer and look for the latest device drivers from the manufacturer for that printer, and I reinstall it.
Does that mean calling the manufacturer?
No, you can actually, if you have online access, or you could go to a library, or if you get it probably, you know, a friend's house if you don't have internet access. Uh-huh. What I would do is you take down the make and model number of the printer. So, for example, if it's an HP printer or a Dell, you would go to HP.com, and they have a support area. And actually, HP is very good. Dell is very good about this. You put in their model, and they'll give you a page that lists all of the different files that they make freely available for you to download to your computer so that you can actually install their product. And like I mentioned earlier on the air, when I reconfigured my son's computer, one of the files actually told me that the computer had a problem that I didn't even know about but was experiencing because it was showing symptoms. So, you know, by going to HP.com, doing a search on the model that you have and looking for the latest Windows XP driver for that printer and then downloading that and reinstalling
just a click,
it.
Yep.
So you get the latest driver, HP driver.
Correct.
And the model number, is that the thing that says DeskJet 323C, or
correct,
do I have to look underneath for...
Nope, that's it.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
So, yep. Not underneath somewhere like a serial number.
The
okay.
key thing is when you download a file, that usually you have to click on it, and then Windows will come back and say, do you want to run or save it? I usually tell people to save it, so just when you save it, know where you're saving it on your computer, and then... there might be some instructions, and HP is a little particular in terms of installation. Sometimes they tell you to run their installation, and sometimes they tell you to, you know, follow the prompts on the screen from when you're adding a printer to your computer using Windows. So you might want to look and see what instructions are there and, you know, and follow those instructions that they give you.
This will all be what I get when I go to HP.com. It
Correct.
Won't be something that I have to... order and have come in the
mail.
Okay, all right, well, thank you very much.
Yep,
thanks for calling. And Sandy in Winter, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question. Okay, we've always had Norton antivirus. It cost a fortune per year to have it, okay?
Yep.
And somebody has told us to go in and get one of these free, like I think it's AVG antivirus.
Okay.
Okay, what is the, would we still be okay with it? You know, we're kind of leery. This is why I'm calling you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Usually what I do is I download a couple of antivirus solutions. So one is, I mentioned it earlier in other shows, it's called ClamWin, C-L-A-M-W-I-N. It's a project that's out on the internet that people freely participate in and keep it up to date. The drawback on that is that they notify you. You know, they update your system. It runs in your little system tray, and it will update your system when there are updates available for the virus database. But when the program needs updating, they tell you to go to their website and get it. So you have to get a little familiar and comfortable with going to their site, clicking on download, knowing where you download it on your computer, and then running it, and then it'll be updated. So it's a little extra work. Free programs like AVG, Avast is another one, Bitdefender, a little bit more polish. You know, they interact with your system. They go and say there's an update, and they get it for you and, you know, work with your system and update it for you. So, excuse me, that's a little bit cleaner. The thing that you have to be careful about is you need to get these programs, download them, but not install them when you have Norton still installed on your system.
Mm.
And you need to, once you get them on your computer, put them in a separate folder, maybe call it downloads, and then within their AV folder or whatever, however you want to keep track of it, and then get offline and uninstall Norton. It's going to interact with you in terms of, you sure you want to do this? And, you know, you go through the Windows add remove program and, you know, get it off your system. You might have to go through it a couple of reboots just to make sure it's really gone, because they're very tightly integrated into the operating system once they get onto your system. And they could be a little bit tricky to get off, but you can do it. And then you run, then go back. And after you've rebooted a couple of times and Norton's gone, you can run your installations of the other antivirus programs and then plug your computer back into being online and get those programs updated, and then you're current. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind that no one system is ever 100% protected, because people are creating new viruses, new Trojans, new ways to get in the back door, and that's how they get their information to update, you know, their databases to try and keep the masses current as best as possible. So, you know, make sure you're updating those antivirus programs and not letting subscriptions lapse that they're a week old, because then something cycles around the internet and you get hit with something that is out there, and that's how you get in trouble.
And thank you very much for calling. And Pete, thank you. You'll be back in a month or so and we'll do this again.
Yep. Thanks, Larry.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Take a look at his website at infostar.com. Thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.